I've been on more than 100 media platforms around the world, and I've never shared this thing. So,
what was your childhood like?
I was consistently last in class in primary school. Like, I could do a farm from start to end and harvest my corn. I could do Gary. A bit of exclusive. I did not have a very good relationship with my stepdad. One of the biggest regrets in my life is that he passed on when we were just making up. No government school will admit me because I don't have common interests. I did DS Max. Barging into a stranger and trying to convince a stranger to buy. No school can teach you that.
Did I just risk my life for a piece of wood? Like, I should have been gone.
Whatever happens to you, and whatever happens to us, as long as we remain chief figuring officers, we're going to win.
Why? Why? Why so?
It's like reverse witchcraft kind of thing. How can you be running a business and on a daily basis, 50 new people don't know you? If you put me now, that puts the president and his ministers and put Cameroonians and say, who do you blame?
Please break it down, and I don't want you to give me shallow answers.
I'll pick Cameroonians. I've never bought a car, right? I don't want to drive.
Know what it takes to run your life every month. But you saw me out, man. You got married and left us. People actually reached out to me. They thought that we were fighting.
Yeah. When I was informed that the baby was born, I sweated. One time I was talking to my wife and I said, God helping me, but I have a personal decision. There's no day that there'll be anything like adultery or midget. They're against my kingdom values as a person.
What's up, my friend? Welcome to this episode of DRB. Before we jump straight into today's episode, I'd love to specially invite you to take 10 seconds and join our 21,000 plus smart friends on emails. I've been sending out emails for the last couple of years, and most of my friends will always write back and say these are like the favorite things that they look forward to on the internet every month. And so once you join our 21,000 plus smart friends using the link in the description below, we're going to send you out a mind-blowing email once every month for free. And you're going to get an email every time that an amazing episode like this goes live. So if you're joining us for the very first time or you're new to everything that we do, I'd love to say special welcome. Don't forget to hit the follow button wherever you listen to your podcast. And please check out the links in the description for very helpful resources. How are you feeling about yourself in this current state of your life right now? What would you say to this?
The funny thing is, I'm in a very delicate state of my life right now. So, asking how I'm feeling right now, I can say a lot of pressure, a lot of different things going on, because why do I say so? I am in a stage where I am in a transition stage, where I am transitioning my work into a very global stage. In the last 11 years, the work I have done in Cameroon, Africa, yes, I've been traveling to other continents doing work, but this is the stage where in the last 2 years, I am setting up our operations and offices in the US and in Dubai, trying to scale the work we do internationally in a real, what they say, real global sense. So that's where I am right now, but it's been fun so far, and that's part of the entrepreneurship process. Yeah.
Right, because I asked you the question because I know a lot of times when you are in a position just like yourself, you always find yourself at a point where you're meeting people, you meet a lot of people, you speak to a lot of people, but in most of these conversations, you're giving out energy.
Exactly.
And it's that point of you're giving, everyone is coming, running to you for a solution. And exactly. I wonder if most times we actually take a step back and feel and be like, how am I feeling in this moment? How am I getting back this energy? The exact same reason why I'm taking some time off social media. But that was the exact reason why I was asking you that. But what's one thing I need to learn about your childhood? Let's talk about your childhood from growing up. And I want to carry this up right from your childhood, and then we're probably going to talk about more things. But about your childhood, what was your childhood like growing up with mom? Was your dad in the picture? What was it like for you and your family at the period of growing up?
My childhood was kind of a bit unique, but my childhood was in the typical village setting, you know. But I would have to say, I'm like first generation kids born out of wedlock in the family and the community. So I grown up not knowing my dad, just knowing my mom. And she later on got married to my stepdad. But I grew up mostly around my mom and her siblings, sisters, and then two brothers. So my childhood was kind of undulating. Sometimes I live with my aunt, sometimes I live with my mom, and all of that. But throughout the primary school setting, I was in the village before I moved to Kumbo, the town where I did my secondary school. But my childhood was just like that of a typical person who, you know, a kid who grew up in the farms, you know, doing corn, gari, beans, doing all of these things and just surviving. And sometimes you carry things on your head to go sell in a bigger market, in the Kumu market, mm-hmm. or Babisi market, or you turn it to Babisi and they take it to Bamenda market and all of that. Yeah, so I do all the hunting. I had 2 dogs. I know how to set traps.
Did you?
I was a good palm wine tapper. So, yeah, all of those things, did them while in the village. It was a very interesting kind of childhood because I think resilience, you get it from that kind of a place and knowing how to walk, you know, long distances, because in our village, you didn't have cars. You didn't, it's a village where you could see a car once a month kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Right. And what did that process ever get to a point where you were kind of, maybe this is a limiting belief for what you had to achieve? Because I'm curious how you left from having that kind of a childhood where everything around you, and I can say this from experience, when I was growing up, and this is a way different example, but when I was growing up, because of the fact that for some reason, my dad was always in church, my mom was in church, I find myself growing up wanting to become a pastor. And every time someone asks me, I will say, I want to become a pastor. And later on, when I grow up, and I still wanted to, but at one point I sat myself down, is this really what I want to do? Is this what God is calling me to do? Or was it because my environment at that time was surrounded by pastors? Those were the people I looked up to. And I could always just be like, I wanted to become a pastor. But the reason why I share that story is because I feel that a lot of times when we grow up, our environment affects us and how we think at that point. So how did that environment affect you? And when was the switch of, okay, I needed to start doing something differently?
Yeah. Yeah, I think nobody is immune to environment, I was. And the truth is, I was not the kind of person who was fun about education. That's the sad thing. Like, when I say that, I'm like, are you serious?
Really?
I was consistently last in class in primary school. Consistently last.
Really?
Yes, the last in primary school. So even in secondary school, when it was, you know, in the Cameroon system, you are recognized to have passed if you had 10 average and above. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, I have never had 10 average. My highest average in secondary school was 8.25. And I was so happy that I had 8.25. I was always promoted on trial. And the boss had told me one time that it's because they don't want my mom to be paying fees double because she used to struggle to pay the fee. Right? So I'm painting that picture so you see that village setting where you are able to make some money from, you know, palm wine, make some money from I could do a farm from start to end and harvest my corn. I could do gari, plant cassava, take care of it. It grows, I remove it, grater the gari, go sell in the market. You see? So I'm green in a village setting where nobody talks about education. You don't admire anybody who is doing well in education. But when I'm outside in the community, you see your age mates, they're dreaming of different things. You know, I have 4 dogs, I have 5 dogs, I have 6 traps. I have a farm of palm wine, of palm trees and all of that. That was a pride by then. You know, that used to be our dream at that time. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, when you're finishing primary school, in a normal setting, you already know where you're going to after, you know, class 7 by then.
Exactly.
When you write your first school leaving.
Yeah.
Me, the plan was that when I finish, my stepdad by then was a carpenter. So the plan was when I finish, adding to the farms I already had, because by that time, they already giving me farm, owning farms. You know, in the village, you need a farm, you just look for a fowl. And palm when I go give to the village head and he gives you a farm. That was what we used to do, right? But then my stepdad was a carpenter. So the plan was, since they already have farms and some palm wine bushes and all of that, so I would learn carpentry from him. And you know, that was it. There was no dream of traveling to the city, to the town to do anything. It was never part of the plan. There was never a plan for me to go to secondary school.
So what was the switch at that point?
The switch happened when my mom's elder sister, and that is the person that a lot of people know as my biological mom, because that is the person I spent most of my adulthood life with. Her elder sister used to live in the city. And a bit of exclusive, I did not have a very good relationship with my stepdad. So it was never primary for him to see me through secondary school, kind of, right? So that I knew, because I grew up having a very strained relationship with him. And another exclusive is, one of the biggest regrets in my life is that he passed on when we were just making up. We were just 1 year that I decided that, you know, I grew up hating him, like in genuine hatred, because of how he treated me and all of that. But unfortunately, he died, though we made up fully and have that good relationship and all of that. But we started the process. That's the good thing about it. I forgive him for having grew up with it as a child with all that hatred in your head about somebody is terrible. Yeah, but I know what it means, you know, to carry that in your heart and to be treated in a way that, you know, you don't deserve it. My mom's elder sister now, who used to be in town, in Kumu town, now she loved me, and she loves me like her son. Like many people, even till now, many of my friends know her as my biological mother. She left Kumu town, came to the village, and said, she's taking me and I have to go to school. She doesn't know how, but I must go to school.
Ooh.
That was Ooh. Where the shift happened. I remember that time very well. We entered Kumbu around 1 a.m. in the year 2000. Entered Kumbu, was my first time to see mini cars, see light, electricity, all type of things and all of that, right? We entered at that time, the year 2000, I never forget, 1 a.m., I stepped foot there. The next day, they started looking for admission. No government school could admit me because I don't have common entrance, right? So it was only a mission school that could take me. So that's how I ended up at Chaffee Memorial Baptist College. That's where I went to school for 5 years. And I went to school for over a month, and I had my uniform for the first time in November. Right, I was always the odd kid in school because there was no plan. I didn't, books were just coming as I was going to school. Right, so that's my story, and that is that simple action that made me, because
that changed.
If she didn't do that particular act, I would have remained in the village, a palm wine tapper, a farmer, whatever you can think of.
I read at some point, because I would assume that even when you got enrolled into school, you probably lived with her. It wasn't an easy journey. But I want us to fast forward a little to the period where, there was a time when you became a bike rider to survive.
Yes.
That was barely at the time you started a journey. How did that period go down?
That was after high school, because after high school, I could not see myself through university, and my mom, that's my aunt, who took me from the village, could not afford, because she was just a nurse, and she also had her own 5 biological kids, and she adopted me as the seed, right? So when I was done with that high school stuff, and I decided to enroll in the university that I would sponsor myself, that was where now, before doing that, I was already doing car wash, working in building construction sites, working in bakery to package bread. I was an assistant in a cyber cafe doing night shift where scammers come and work and fight over my head. Right? And I would go and work from 10 a.m., from 10 p.m. in the night to 5 a.m. in the morning, and then the day guys come and do stuff. And then in the process now, I had to learn how to do Okada, and I became a bike rider in the city of Bamenda. And that was how I paid my university fees on all these sources of making money. Yeah.
You share like that, I started to think about one of the times when I was in the, I think I was at lower seats or upper seats at the time. So I was living alone. I just moved away from my parents. Then because I needed money so badly. And like you said, sometimes you sit down and maybe they send you like 3,000 to 5,000 every month, but you have handouts to buy, you have to feed, you have to do other things. That money is not enough. And so I got into a job because I could swim. We would use, you know, when these people who bring down trees, right? They would go into the forest and bring down trees. But the problem was where these trees were located were in somewhat kind of an island. So my job was to go in a canoe with about maybe a team of about 3 or 4. We will go in a canoe and then carry that wood and up and load into the canoe. And then we paddle with it, come back to the land, and then carry from the river shore to the road. And that's how one log of wood would charge about 200 francs or something. And one time, I remember when we had filled the entire boat with wood, and we got to one point where the boat started to sink. I don't know how it happened. The boat started to sink, and then we've struggled to get the boat back up. But two logs of wood fell, and then the owner of the wood was like, "Now my wood that so if my wood go, when I no go get on that money."
What?
I jumped River Badi in Manfe. I jumped. I was struggling. I got the hood carried on the head. I was bringing it towards the canoe. I was like, but it's really an interesting journey where when I came back, I sat and I was like, did I just risk my life for a piece of wood? Like, I should have been gone. Let's touch about still, we're transitioning from your journey. When was the point where you went, I wanted to start something like this? Because I would assume that there was a period where you were like, maybe I should stop doing the bike business. Or even if you were still doing it, there was a point you probably came back to yourself. You're like, okay, I need to start doing this. Or this is what I want to pursue. When was that turnaround point for you?
So during the last year of my BSc program, while I was still in Bamenda doing all the odd jobs and Okada and all of that, then there was a position that was launched back in the largest microfinance in Kumbo. At the time, I think they still are. And I applied and I was shortlisted for an interview. That was how I went to Kumbo to do the interview, and I was selected as one of the staff for that microfinance. So it was like a dream. So, you know, the kind of place where everybody in the town wants to work, kind of. So it was a big place, prestigious, looking at the area and all of that. But
right
in the midst of all of that, I have always just loved, sometimes when I sit with people or young people, I just start teaching or just saying things that are not typical book, things about life and how I'm seeing, you know, this is what you can do to make more money, survive, stop complaining here and there. So I used to say that, and at that time, of course, I didn't know that there was something called speaker, trainer, inspirational speaker. I had no idea that something like that, right? But when I went back to Kumbo, one of my friends who was a teacher in an evening high school, was leaving town. Mm-hmm. And since he knew that I did marketing and business management in high school and I read those kind of stuff, he needed somebody to help. It was towards GCE. So he needed somebody to stand in for him and teach for 2 weeks so that he could travel and come back. And then he came to me at work, met me at work, and said, "Look, I know you did this, you're not a teacher, but I need you to..." I was like, "No, I cannot do that. I cannot stand in front of people. I cannot be a teacher. I cannot do that. I'm not a teacher." I refuse blunt that I have never been in front of people and I cannot do it. The funny thing is, at the end, I took that class to GCE. So the guy just came and said, "You know what? The students prefer you over me. So just continue teaching." Right? And that was how the transition started.
And it kind of reminds me of my journey, me starting out when I left home and me starting my business, other things that I did in my second year of the university. And I say this a lot to most of the people that I work with, even my junior ones. Mm-hmm. The period when you are in school is the greatest time for you to fail, because first, exactly, you have some little safety nets, at least, exactly, because you can turn back to your mom and dad, and they would at least send you some feeding allowance. And then at some point, maybe your house is still being paid for those that are still privileged, or you are having. So it's that point where you kind of test things. And I feel like that molded me a lot to try my hand into different things. So I wanted you to talk about that process for you, how that process molded you, but most importantly, how you feel that that will relate to someone who is watching this right now in regards to, hey, I need to try a lot of things because there's something I learned. I think I read this about 2 weeks ago. The faster you fail, the faster you learn.
Yeah.
Right. So tell me about that process, how that molded you and how someone listening to you right now could benefit from that implementation strategy to get their way forward.
I think that is one of the best things that happened to me was that within that period in my life, I did a lot of crazy stuff. I have sold in beer parlors. I've done crazy stuff just to make money and survive. Right. A part of my story that I left out, which I was going to bring in this question, is there was a time that after high school, I did a stint in Boya in Motenga, where my uncle is. And I did DS Max. You know, those people that direct sales, right? You wear a tie, wear stuff.
Who doesn't have the DS Max?
I did DS Max in the city of Boya, Limbe, knock doors and all of that. And I always say the biggest blessing that, one of the biggest things that made me an entrepreneur is that experience in DS Max. You know what it means to carry products on your back and knock doors from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and you don't sell 1,000 francs?
Totally.
That's why till now, there's no amount of failure in my life and rejection that embarrasses me. I'm serious. There's none. That particular experience where somebody can do that 3 days in a row and you don't sell 1,000 francs. You knock hostels. You go to a hostel and you knock 300 doors and you don't sell anything. And just that experience of barging into a stranger and trying to convince a stranger to buy, no school can teach you that.
Right.
Many people that cannot talk to strangers. But moving every single day and talking to 100+ strangers, people you have never met, and convincing them to buy, and they say, no, get out. They say things about you. You develop something that very few people benefit in life. And that's one of my biggest things that, you know, helped me a lot. Then some, of course, the Okada, the building, construction, resilience, hard work, dedication, all of those things. I always say that you don't read courage and become courageous. You don't read about hard work and become a hard worker. It's the process that trains you and all of that. And there's something I call resourcefulness. Many people are broke in life and struggling because they are not resourceful. Resourcefulness is an attitude. Like you said, you needed money, and you didn't have money. You're like, okay, you know what? Let me become resourceful and go transfer plank over some rivers and use a canoe and get paid 200 francs. But somebody who is not resourceful will see that and say, okay, there's no money, I'm broke, and start complaining and looking for giveaways on social media. Right? So there are people that they don't know how to talk to strangers. They're afraid, they're scared.
Right.
One of the most powerful.
How do you think someone can build that skill?
Sorry?
How do you think we could build that skill?
Exactly what I said. These are our experiences. You cannot read how to approach strangers and expect to do that if you don't go do it, right? So the circumstances that life put us in forced us to learn those skills, you see? Mm-hmm. And for some people, they don't need circumstances. They need to put themselves, they need to insert themselves into the circumstances. If not, many people remain struggling. Meanwhile, I always say, again, as I said earlier, it is not the lack of resources that is keeping people behind. It's the lack of resourcefulness. And I always argue that resources follow resourcefulness.
Right.
Money will follow resourceful people. So you cannot keep sitting in your comfort zone, like I like to say, if you stay in your father's house, you only get your father's money. But if you want strangers' money, leave your father's house, go to events, go to sessions, go do something that you're going to meet people that are not in your comfort zone, and you'll get paid by those people.
All right.
So that's why I always say that sometimes difficult circumstances are a gift. And what is the gift from those circumstances? You build resilience, you build courage, you build resourcefulness, you build things that nobody can lay hands on you and you receive for us in church, right? The resilience cannot be transferred by laying of hands. Grit cannot be transferred by laying of hands. You need to work it out, grow into it, and it becomes one of the most powerful assets that you can use, because when you have these things, go to any country, you cannot be stranded. Show me somebody stranded in any country, there's something they're missing out. There's something they don't know that they can use to get what they need to get. Any city, any location, village or town, put anybody who's resourceful, they'll figure it out.
All right.
You see? Yeah. So I always say that whatever happens to you, or whatever happens to us, as long as we remain chief figuring officers, we're going to win.
Right. Let's talk about in your position right now, you've been able to coach thousands of people. And sometimes I'm curious as to your perspective, how and what do you think is the biggest thing that you feel that a lot of people fail in? And I know that we could take this anywhere, be it from mindset to consistency, to personal discipline, sometimes even right to the tiniest things as being very ungrateful, sometimes not even being able to manage relationships. It could go anywhere. But maybe just give me some of those top points that you feel like, maybe two or three of them that you feel that a lot of people neglect, which should have been really good molding blocks for building their journey, be it in career or in business.
Yeah. Among all of the many things that exist, I summarize them into three. Number one is mindset. Mindset, it can sound so basic, but it still remains one of the biggest problems, especially in the African setting and even in the European and American setting. There are still people that are in very good economies, but when you look at the top 1%, it's still very small. The lower class is still very big. The middle class is still very big in countries where everybody wants to go to, right? And these countries, some of them being capitalist economies, anybody can rise to the top. But many people cannot rise to the top because their mindset is not yet that incredible or that driven or full of growth-oriented actions that can help them achieve that success, right? And that's why I wrote the book, Redefining Yourself for Success. The point was to help people go through a framework for 35 days that will help them re-engineer that mindset and operate from that possibility, growth, value creation mindset. The second thing is procrastination. We easily procrastinate. We easily procrastinate. And that's why I wrote the book from chief procrastination officer to chief execution officer. Many people easily procrastinate. And I like to say, if you're going to achieve results, move from being a chief procrastination officer to being a chief execution officer. Because a lot of people want to do things. Everybody can have a dream. Everybody can have a dream, but few people have become the people that can execute those dreams. And the human body is designed to be lazy. That's why every morning you don't like to leave the bed, no matter how much you have been living. Since 11 years ago, I can count the days that 4 a.m. has made me in bed. But this morning, I did not like to leave the bed. Every morning, the body still hates to leave the bed. The body never gets used to uncomfortable things. Never. So that is why great people don't do things from the place of motivation and how they feel. They do things from the place of discipline. Is it time to wake up? shut the
it's
hell
an
up
obligation.
Don't wait. I didn't feel like waking up. No. You will never achieve great things with feelings.
Right.
You see? And people who live by feelings are always, they always procrastinate because your body 99% of the times will never feel like doing something challenging. Never. So you need to learn that for you to do great things, you need to switch from feelings to discipline and consistent execution. So if we don't do that, it's going to be a challenge. The next thing that I see that is also a challenge, which is linked to procrastination a bit, is the consistent desire to acquire relevant knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's still very low among many people. Many people still consider knowledge acquisition, upskilling and reskilling, and seeking strategic information to a group of people. Maybe you can only be studying because once you are a teacher, want to study and go teach, right? Or a professor, or all of that. However, there are people that have incredible things that they want to do, but they have not grown to become the people that they can do those things. So you see somebody desiring for 10 million francs every month or yearly as income, but their skill set, their knowledge set, and their tool set and information acquisition is not able to help them make that amount of money. So it's like reverse witchcraft kind of thing. So you are designed to make 10 million. Meanwhile, your mindset cannot generate value that can make 10 million. How is that balanced? Let me give you a short testimony. I started something in 2021. I did this 2021 for the first time. I went to a large group of my WhatsApp for those who are just general mentees. And I said, if you're here and you've been running a business for more than 2 years and you have never saved your first 1 million and you're still living well and having a good business, indicate. Many people indicated. I said, okay, this is something I'm testing. I'll select 8 people. I picked up 8 people. And I said, I'll coach you for 1 year. The goal is that before December 31st, all of you should have made your 1 million. Saved. But you are living well, your business is growing, and all of that. What did I change, Ari? What did I change? The only thing I changed in their life was their routine and their mindset. In that group, everybody wakes up at 3:30 a.m. Everybody in that group. So the goal is between 3:30 a.m. and 5 a.m. Sometimes I do a live Zoom call with them for 1 hour and I coach them. The next 1 hour, you study and you plan your day. The second thing that we did was I gave everybody a task. How can you be running a business and on a daily basis, 50 new people don't know you? Are you okay? Who do you want to sell to now? Better have 50 people who know you and nobody buys than nobody knowing you at all. I gave them those tasks. I gave them time when they wake up from bed and nobody goes to bed until it's 11 p.m. Everybody, reduce your television, social media to 5%. I cut off those things. Guess what? Before October, all the 8 people made their first 1 million.
Oh.
All the 8, before October 2021, all the 8 people made their first 1 million. Not even going far. A few weeks ago, I selected some top fans on my page. I was like, these guys have been so amazing. I selected them, put in the group. I said, okay, I'll coach you guys on money habits for 7 days. No, it was 12 days. And before, by the 12 days, there was a lady that she created, a few people created accounts for the first time, right? Information for the first time. And there was a lady that on the 15th day, she sent me a screenshot of her bank account with 300,000 francs that she saved. The only thing I taught them was making money, the concept of learn how to make money, keep money, multiply money, and expand money. And the difference is the mindset, the habits, all of these things I mentioned that becomes a challenge to many people.
Mindset, procrastination, relevant knowledge. And it's really interesting that you talk about mindset that way, because I think that, and let's be honest, I think we should even put this out there. When you travel, you meet a lot of people. And one of the experiences for me is I've met people living in the Western world. Actually, the fact that they have a lot of things very easy also becomes a problem. Mm-hmm. I've met people in the Western world who just feel, oh, life is okay. If I don't have money, I could take a loan. I could do this. I could take this. I dip my hand here. I have a credit card. I have this. And they're totally okay. And I met, there's this lady I met one time. She was like, Ari, can I confide in you? So we're working on something, and secret story, she showed me her bank account, and I was looking at it like not up to £500 or $500. And I was saying to myself, somewhere in my mind, I'm like, if you were born here, let's assume that you're around 29 years of age and you started working when you were, let me just say 18 years. How, like, what's the relation? Me with my Cameroonian mindset, there's no way I wouldn't ace if in the worst years. I'm like, in the worst year, there's no way I won't ace £1 million extra. And so I'm kind of doing the maths for myself. So I think when you talk about mindset, it's sometimes people will be like, maybe it's just Cameroonians. It's a general thing where even the people in the Western world still face that. And it's the question I want to ask you, it's interesting that you've started talking about money. And this is a very, very pertinent topic. You and I know when we start to share stuff online, and especially because we're on a journey, and people kind of see the progress, and they translate the progress to money, which is good, which they think that you have money. I'm happy for them. I'm happy that they think of me that way. But it also comes with a lot of obligations with, you talk to everybody, but, well, let me be fair, not everybody, but 90% of the conversations you have, everyone is struggling to draw away from you. And it gets to a point where, I want us to talk about this in two dimensions though, and it gets to a point where you start feeling a bit, for me, I know that I feel a bit, I don't want to call the word used, but I feel like I need to protect that energy that I have, protect myself, protect that resource, because everyone seems to be wanting to take away from you. How do you manage that in your position? Is there something that you're doing differently? And I'm kind of curious, because I know that we face the same thing, but how are you able to manage that when it comes? And it could go anywhere from friends, family, social media friends, just even the very, just people who comment on your post. How are you able to manage that?
I mean, it's that's a fact. You know, we come from a community where when you travel, a lot of people feel as if you're a multimillionaire. You're doing so well, not knowing that some of these trips are funded by the organizations and all of that, right? But one thing that, I mean, it was really overwhelming, heavily overwhelming. And since I'm into training, and people go, oh, can you train me to start doing this also and all of that? And trainings are not free. They are not cheap, right? They have years of experience and nights of hard work and curating and strategy and all of that. So one thing that I did, I decided to curate some things that I teach in mentorship, which are the foundation of it all. And I made it into a free bundle of about 5 courses. When you come for mentorship, I send it to you. Go and watch that. I will just tell you, you know what? At the moment, I'm not taking mentees right now because I'm very selective. But go and watch that and give me feedback after a couple of days. Guess what? Majority don't come back. Right? There's another one I did. It has about 12 sources of income for Cameroonian young people and even anybody. Right, and you can start with 0 francs. There's a strategy on how to start, and everything is there. When you come for money, I send to you. Watch that video and come and tell me which one you want to start and give me a plan of action. Not up to, if 100 have come, not up to 2 come back for feedback.
I have a friend who reached out to me that way, and I, very, very funny story. Long story short, he reached out to me. Ari, I want to learn. I didn't bother. I created something like that, but I had a password. So I sent him the link, didn't send him the password. Long story short, it's 3 years now. He has not asked for the password.
So you showed that he didn't even click the link, right?
No way.
Exactly. So you now begin to see that is it the environment? Is it the president? Is it the government really? I always say that. See, here's my point of view about Cameroon and some African countries. Let's say Cameroon, for example. If you put me now, that put the president and his ministers and put Cameroonians and say, who do you blame for Cameroon? I'll pick Cameroonians. Yes.
Why so?
Every leader is a reflection of the people. And a country where the top is terrible and the bottom is also terrible is going to produce a double terrible country. If our government was full of corruption and all of those things, and at the bottom, we were independent, thinking, value creation, driven people, then there are certain things in the private sector that we still control. You understand? When it comes to exchange of value, demand, and supply, all of that is still a lot. We still influence them as private sector players. But there are many things that when some people do, you begin to ask them, did Paul Biya leave the Unity Party to come and do it? When you go take alcohol and drink and get drunk, did he leave to come and influence you to drink and get drunk? Did he actually did he take the alcohol and put it in your mouth to do that?
No.
What is the best gift for a developing country, for developed countries, United States, Canada, and all of that? The people are independent thinkers. They question you. They do stuff. Many a times I've asked people, when was the last time? I asked somebody, so a group of people in one teaching, in one community, I asked, do you know the budget of your council? Looking at me. Do you know the role of your parliamentarians? When last did all of you gather and go meet the mayor and ask him some questions about his mandate? When last? They're not going to push you out. It's just a discussion. It's just a town hall meeting, which is legal and according to the constitution. When did you do that? Let's come to the taxation department in business. I've gone to many training sessions in Cameroon, and I'll ask people, how many of you read the tax code of this year? Out of 1,500 entrepreneurs, not up to 5 will raise up their hand. So, like, what is tax code? But a tax officer will come and look at your business and scan through his eyes and say, okay, according to what I am seeing, your tax is this amount of money.
Right.
You now start shaking and going to pay. Did the president stop you from reading that information that can help you make better business decisions? Civil servants who thrive on bribery and corruption, they thrive on the ignorance of the citizens.
Of the people. I want us to talk about relationship with money. And I know this is the last question I'll ask on money, because I know this from my experience. Lots of times I'd have friends be like, Ari, you have a lot of money, but the truth is just that you become good at managing the money. For example, something as simple as cooking at home can save you more than half of your earnings every month, which kind of it's a tripling effect. I go out with my friends, we sit down somewhere, a bottle of wine is 200,000 francs. And I call the waiter and I tell my friends, I don't care what I wear with girls, with ladies. I'll be like, I can't spend 200,000 francs on a bottle of wine. That's not for my entertainment budget. Do you have anything for 5,000? Do you have anything for 10,000? And those little decisions, I can count the times when I stand up for myself. I know that that helps me quite a lot. And just those good money decisions. So I wanted you to talk about our relationship with money, regardless, because I'm not trying to belittle anyone's earnings. I think that regardless of how much you make, there is a way that if you manage, and again, even the Bible says it, faithful in little, faithful in much. So how do you manage your money, and how do you feel is at least a confident relationship to have with money, so that as you grow, you can begin to advance with whatever your pursuits are?
Yeah. You know, money is very simple and at the same time very complex. And I think that the foundation of money, if you see somebody whose money life is very complex, then the person has zero or limited financial intelligence. And if you see somebody whose money life is easy and growing, the person has a lot of information about money. And that is the first step. If you want to become better with your money, the first step is to read about money. Learn as much as you can about money. What does it mean to make money? People say, I define money, I make money. What does it mean to make money? What is the process that goes in that simple action that makes you to receive money and somebody is happy with the supply? Just settling with the fact that for you to make money, you have to give out value. That can change somebody's perspective about making money. You start thinking, oh, what value can I create? And what how can I deliver this value and get paid, right? Mm-hmm. And then another part, big part of money is the art of keeping money. We talk about savings.
Right.
You see, it's not just about keeping money. It is about that process training you to develop the attitude of self-discipline. You knowing that, look, this money is for keeping. I don't care whatever is happening. I don't care how excited I am about something. This money is for keeping. And the next thing about money is the art of multiplying money. And many, this is where many people have not really, really spent some time to acquire information or train their mindset to think about it, right? So when it comes to money, is the information. And a big part of money, especially for us in the African setting, is our large family settings where we get to, you know, give out money a lot in terms of helping and all of that, which is part of our culture and our nature. But at the same time, doing it the right way in a way that is sustainable is more important. You can give out a lot without structure, without system, and you end up broke. And as I always say, people that take when you are broke, they'll look for another place to continue taking. Hmm. You see, they'll only tell you a share and maybe laugh at you, right? So I have a couple of principles I teach around this in the community, and I'll share two. Number one, if you talk to many of my mentees, they'll fondly use the statement, I am broke. There's a statement I teach them known as, I am broke, which means my money has other priorities. So I always teach them. So I start from the first part, which is budget your money. And that's what I've been doing for a couple of years. Every month, I have a budget known as family helps. There's a percentage of my monthly income that goes known as family helps. And that budget, if for that month, that 20% or 15%, if for that month is 100,000 francs, I keep aside. When anybody from the family or a close friend come and you need emergency help and all of that, if that budget can sort out, I give it to you without thinking twice. The challenge is when that money is finished,
we're done for the month.
If it's not of a, if you are not dying, you're on your own. No, I always tell you, look, either you wait for next month, I don't have money to give you. And I am broke doesn't mean I don't have money. It means the money I have now is for other priorities.
Definitely.
And I like to fondly tell people, somebody's emergency is not your emergency. You can decide to make it your emergency by intention. Don't let your emotions make somebody's emergency your emergency. You see, that way, people have spent capital on things that didn't make sense. You see, people have spent livelihood on things that they were not supposed to spend money on because they spend money from the place of emotions, not from the place of reasoning. You see, so when they do that, it's very important to have that particular structure. It's going to help you now to scale, to multiply, because the keeping, you cannot multiply what you don't keep. Every investor I have ever read about, they are very good at keeping money. Just keep it first. Research, ask questions before you move it from that keeping account to that investment account. It's going to help you take the steps from that. And when you do that, it's going to help a lot.
Right. It's interesting that you said that. I tell my mentees two most important things. know what it takes to run your life every month, which is something that I've become really good at doing. So I know that as I am right now, this is the amount of money that I spend on softwares for my business. This is how much I spend on myself. This is how much I spend on rent. This is how much I spend on this. If you wake me up in the middle of night, I have a ballpark amount of what it takes to run my life every month. And the second thing I always say is, regardless of how bad things get, even during the month, always keep something. That's even if it gets very bad, even if the thing you're keeping is just 100 fans, I think it is more about the process and the consistency of you consciously setting money aside, which frames you. If I say, let's say at the end of the month, I make 1,000 francs, I will be like, I need to keep, let's just say hypothetically, if I need to keep 400 francs. And I think that really helped me in a way of kind of getting my finance under control, where even in the times, so quite honestly, we all have rainy days where it gets to a certain point, but you always have reserves. You don't rely on people. You don't get to people, hey, can I have some quick days? Can I? Because you have your reserves and you have that. And that's, I mean, it's really interesting. I hope that people who watch this conversation can go back and start to rethink, and especially when it comes to their finances.
Yeah.
One of the things that I would say that I'm really jealous of you, and I really need you to break this down for me, because I'm asking this selfishly, even for myself. One thing that I admire a lot about you, and I think you have become incredibly good at doing, is managing your time, number one. But I want you to talk about it in the aspect of creating your content. What's the system for? How detailed are you? Do you consciously say, okay, I'm not going to take more than 15 minutes to write this post. And when I write it, I don't have to read more than 2 times. I want to understand how that works. And it's not even like it's shallow content. It's content that literally will get you thinking. Break it down for me.
Yeah, I think that is what is happening now is I think it's a long-term culture that
right.
have been there. I think the foundation of this started like 8 years ago, not 10 years ago when I started my journey. Because one of the challenges that I set myself on was that every day I'll write something for at least 300 words. That's one challenge I set like since 2013 or 12, like that. But it was for the purpose of, because I noticed that if I'm going to grow in what I want to do, and writing helped me so to also understand things better and contextualize and you know, break it down more. Sometimes when I read something I don't understand, I take a word and I try to construct value from that word. That's what I used to do. I even still do that now. So it helps me to understand more and all of that. So that culture trained me a lot to now be very quick at generating ideas and just putting them down. And many a times, one thing that I've learned how to do secondly is that when ideas come, I jot them down. And there are places where I intentionally use those places to expand content, like flight, like in the car. Now, here's the funny thing. I've never bought a car, right? You know one of the reasons I've never bought a car?
Tell me.
I don't have a car as well. I don't want to drive. Because when I'm on Douala, you're on the road. Boya, anyway, that is when I actually flesh a lot of content or I add more ideas to stuff. So many a times I just copy, I take it to Google Docs where it helps me to correct some grammar, spellings, all of that in few, and I'm done, and then I can share. So I have content bank. I have content right now that if I want to share every day, three content, I can share it in December and I will not finish writing any new content. Because
when do you store this content? Is it WhatsApp chats? Is it Google Docs?
Google Docs. I keep my content on Google Docs so that it's easy for me to access on laptop or the phone. But I think this what is happening now is thanks to that goal that I set for myself years ago. So it made me now to quickly convert something into writing. So I don't know. I don't struggle to think of how will I start writing. And secondly, like you and any other content creator, content is the front office.
Day-to-day life.
Content is the front office. The back office is your expertise. Are you an expert in your field? Like I can write content on any business principle almost. because I read business, I've studied business, I do all of that, so I know the stuff. So many a times when people struggle to write good content, they are good writers. You can be a good writer and a bad content creator in business. Somebody can be a good writer and a bad content creator. You can create good content in media because you are good at media. You're a trained journalist. You study new media and do all of those stuff. So your content writing is your front office. And some say, oh, I very easily write. Like, for example, I also admire the way you interact with on media. You have a very fun, stylish way of doing that. Me, I'm too serious. I'm like, how can I be so fun like Irene in replying comments, right? So, but I've picked up some ideas from you, the way I react to certain things, because I learned from you. But you are training it. So the challenge for many people is they want to write like you, they want to write like me, they want to write like other people, but they forget that it's just the front end. The back end is that these people command a certain level of expertise, industry knowledge, information around what they're writing about.
Right. I would summarize it in about three points. The first thing is having that consistency, which is helping you to learn more. The second thing is finding the space and keeping space to consciously create the content. Like you said, be it most of the times for me, that comes across even when I'm traveling. Funny thing, when I'm in the toilet, I want to create content because it's like my inspiration.
How many times I've left the shower to come and type a point?
Right. And the last thing is building yourself. Yeah. And the last thing is building yourself, because the level of content you create is directly proportionate to your expertise, because that flows across. And so I think that that's very important for someone who is taking notes. There was a time when you talking about content, and I don't know how you're going to share on this, but there was a time where I observed you use the F word in the content, and that created a lot of controversy. And I wanted us to talk about it. What was your mindset around, just walk us through how it happened.
What was I talking about? But that content, I think I ended up deleting that content. And I think my mentor spoke to me about it. Anyway, and I think I deleted that content, right? What happened? I think I was pissed off about something, and I just...
And it wasn't in a bad way. It wasn't in a bad way.
It wasn't in a bad way, but it was, you know, I like to be very subtle when I'm angry. So you will not know. I just passed a silent message that you will not know. But it was just trying to express a feeling and doing something I've never done before. There was nothing. I just ended up deleting that because many people are so surprised, because there's a way that I've built a particular brand for so long, and there are things that when people see that I do, it doesn't make sense to a lot of people. Yeah, but it was just one of those moments. Yeah.
Right. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I think this one point where we have, I would say that we have different opinions. You have a team of about 17 right now.
Yes.
That you manage. And for me, and this is my perspective for me as someone who's running a digital business, my idea about running a team is, right now I have a team of four. I wouldn't want to run a team more than 10. My idea of success
in
my team is
it's very crazy.
Tell me about 10. My idea of success around my team is going to be the point where I'm running a team of about 7 to 10 people, and we're generating 50 to 100 million every month. First, because I feel that with the digital business or what we're doing, it's easy to create automation, to automate systems. And I feel like even right now, most of the things that we do, a lot of people are surprised that I still have a little like small team, because we're still generating a lot of content. We're doing a lot of stuff. But that's because I have become incredibly good at automating stuff. And I like to keep that lean. My idea is I want to run a business with 10 employees. We're generating 50 to 100 million a month, and somebody's working with 1 million friends. That's going to be my goal every single month. But I wanted you to talk about the thought around you creating your team. What's the mindset you build when you're, what's the mindset you have when you're building this team, and how do you function with them properly to make sure that you're creating a solid structure, whether in your absence or whether in your presence, there is that machine that is running to keep the entire thing going. How do you do that?
Well, first of all, in our setting, in our Cameroon African setting, one of the biggest things in building a business is having a good team. Is
totally agree.
If you ask me, one of my biggest headaches in running a business is team all through, right? And for us who are startups, building a team is not the same way like in a corporate setting. Like, for example, majority of people on my team started as volunteers or interns. And as the vision was growing, they became full-time team members. And of course, we have people who joined and they left because they didn't feel that it was right or it was their place to be. And all
always
of that.
Have those people.
And and being as a startup, many a times, everything around is always limited, including limited amount of money to pay them very well. And of course, one of my dreams too is there's a way that I want people work for me, the way they are paid and taken care of. But I dream of having a complex for staff and all of there are things that I want to do for people that work with me. Right? But it's going to take time to get there and people who believe in what you're trying to build. Right? Mm-hmm. And one thing that I try to do is making them see the vision, making them see what we are trying to build. First thing is accept that you're building, you're in a building stage. There's no need of trying to claim how big you are and all of that. I always tell my team, look, this is where we are and this is where we need to build so we can get. And if you're staying here, at the moment, I cannot give you the best salary in Cameroon, but I can give you the best salary someday if we take this forward. So I constantly have discussion around vision with the team. It's very important. I constantly, almost like on a weekly basis, if I'm having a session with them, a voice note, a message, I always remind them that, look, this is where we are going to. And I'm not just looking for employees. I'm looking for believers. I'm looking for partners who can take this so that we take it forward to where it can be, right? And I think that's one of the reasons why I've been able to get a very trustworthy team at some level. Some people have disappointed, of course. Many people have disappointed, some have stalled and all of that, you see. But I always prefer to focus on the good that is happening, you see. Secondly, also building an early culture is very important. Many a times, I've seen it around startups a lot, many a times because people feel that they're still very small, they allow a lot of laissez-faire. But if you are going to start building a team that is solid, you need to make sure that the culture is early enough. As they always say in business, culture will eat strategy for breakfast. Bring the best strategy in the wrong culture, culture will destroy that strategy. But a good culture can create the best strategy because the people will think, create, conceive, do all they can to build a strategy that will take the business forward. You see, so start building that culture, start writing policies, create systems and structures very early. Start documenting things that you want to see. You see, start delegating, start giving people responsibilities, trusting them, start being a very good coach in that area. These are things that I did and I'm still doing consistently because, again, that brings us to startup phase. Many of the people that work for us are not experienced people. People are just leaving school. You need to be a very good coach. You are always constantly training. You are constantly coaching.
Sure.
Because, and if you don't do that, you will end up micromanaging and you'll burn out very soon. But when you constantly coach, they will grow into that, mature into it, and they can take it up from there and coach other people into it. Yeah.
Right. I have a policy for me and my team, and something that I try to do is hire, train, I document, and then I delegate. Mm-hmm. So So when I hire you, hey, this is what I want you to do. Go inside your set email list. I train you how to do it. I record a video. That's it. We're documenting it. And then I delegate you the next time. Go and do it by yourself. So that way they can function irrespective of whether I'm around or not. That's very interesting. I want us to talk about something that I know that is very close to your heart. And not all the details into it, but you have a daughter, which you rarely talk about. And I'm not asking you to go into all the details of it, but when I think about the moment and I try to relate myself with you, I wanted to ask you, what was it like for you the day you hear you're about to become a dad, and how that experience changed your life and the actions you take? Because I'll give you a very 10-second story. One time I was in Boya, my junior sister comes to live with me, and the moment she lived with me, that period of my life, just a few months, but that period of my life really shaped me in. I started making decisions, not just for myself, but for two. If I have to step out, I'm thinking, what do I do with this kid? What movie do I leave for her? What do I do that? And it did not hit me until just recently when she made a couple of posts on social media, and she was writing about me and said, the moments when you taught me how to do this, the moments I saw you started doing this. And it rang back to my mind. It's like these little things that I used to do, she watched it. She saw that. And so I wanted to ask you, what was it like, for example, walk us through that process. You mustn't give the details though, but what was it like for you the day you first hear you're about to become a dad? And how did that period change or transform your life from the decisions you made and how you evolved as a person, as a dad?
I don't think there's any man that will hear that you're about to become a dad that you'll not be shaken, a first-time dad. I don't know how, but I feel that looking at the human nature and psychology, it's something that it will break you, but it will cause a lot of transformation, especially if you are somebody who is conscious about life and you have a way that you look at life in a growth positive, particular way that you look at life. So, and many times it's from my experience, and I have heard other friends share this, sometimes it's not about the time, but you see, when you receive the news that the baby is born.
Yes. You are now responsible for another life.
You see that very moment, sometimes when the pregnancy and this, it was just normal. But you just see that particular act that the baby is born. I don't know, but I've heard other friends share the same experience. They're like, Pa, I know we know what to do. My friend told me, I did not know how to react. And then one friend said, so we're just sharing, like, chatting about it. One friend said, when they told me that the baby was born, I didn't speak again. He didn't know what to say again. He just said, he went mute on the phone. He went mute, right? And it's the same for me when I was informed that the baby was born, I just sweated like that, right? I remember that day I was standing somewhere. I just sweated a lot. And 1,001,000,000 things go through your head, right? Okay. Everything went through my head. Okay, this is it. It's actually true.
All right.
This is it. Now everything, another human being has come that totally depends on you. That not provision, but depends on you for life, for guidance, for her destiny. Her next 25 years or 30 years is absolutely a responsibility, from food, whatever, counseling, guidance, coaching, mentorship. All of these things you start thinking about. Now, that is why I think that for a lot of men, their first baby changed them a lot, right? Even if somebody was I've seen people that they were smokers and they stopped smoking because the baby came, or they stopped drinking because they became. You hear a lot of those stories. That's how powerful that particular thing gets to be. But she came, my baby came when, in 2013, she came when I made double decisions. I re-evaluated my life. In short, I rededicated my life to Jesus Christ to be sure that I'm living right. Because they're like, this child will need this. They do need this. You need to, are you growing? Are you becoming a good father, an exemplary father? Will she be proud of? A lot of things that you never thought that they were important in life. And you now start seeing why your parents were behaving the way they were behaving. Because you are now in the same spot and you're seeing things from parenting will make you see things from a totally different angle.
Right.
Totally different angle. Money, relationships, family, places you go, a lot of things. It's going to challenge you. And especially if you are family oriented. If you really want to be, you have made up some decisions on how you want to be and how you want to raise your family and all of that. But it is one of the best things that contributed into my manhood as a person. She is one of the biggest things that altered everything, because as far as being a young man is concerned and maturing very quickly, you know, maturity is not age. Maturity is how you grow in terms of looking at life, approaching life, behaving, thinking, and making certain decisions. Yeah.
We're waiting for it. There's nothing more I can say.
I am available for mentorship.
The man, you don't marry Lifwe. you saw me out, man. You got married and left us in the association of bachelors. How did that happen? Well, run us through that process. I mean, you don't have to go into details you don't want to, but I don't know what question to ask, but you understand what I need. And hey, here's the funny thing. I like the banter that happened online because everyone kept tagging me for some reason. Do you know, I've actually, I asked ChatGPT one time. I was just like, who is Aribate? ChatGPT told me that Aribate is a founder of Sebi Media. So, yeah, I actually screenshotted it. I wanted to send to you. I think for some reason I lost some content from my phone during that time.
The Facebook algorithms confused the guy. No.
But the point is that I like the banter. And to be honest, one in every 10 person or two in every 10 persons will write to me, Harry, you inspire me. I like what you do. It will always be, Harry, you inspire me. I like what you do. You enjoy it. Harry, you inspire me. I like what you do. You enjoy it. So I think that generally, even the algorithms, we have a little nice banter. Some people actually reached out to me. They thought that we were actually fighting. Some people reached out. They felt like we were fighting. Like, Harry, why are they tagging you? How do you feel? Are you depressed? I'm like, no. I like it.
They have no idea what's happening.
I like it. Like I feel proud. I feel fulfilled that you are making a big step in your life, and I feel really happy for you. But what was the details like? And do you have for the details that you want to share?
It's one of the best decisions I have made to me of in my recent years. Of mature years as a man, of course, who you get married to. My wife is she's the biggest blessing that I've had. I mean,
write something. You said the best deal that you closed.
I've closed many business deals, but she's still the best deal that I closed. She's still the best deal that I closed so far. And It was a challenge in terms of, you know, just making sure, you know, sometimes I'm wondering, is this the one? and all of that. They're thinking of family, their in-laws, and all of that. But in all, everything went on so well. I mean, I'm married to an incredible family. My wife's amazing. My family loves her so much. And, you know, because sometimes in marriage, a lot of things get to happen, sometimes unnecessary fights, and, oh, this is not this, this is not that, and all of that. But I've known my wife for a while. The first time I saw her was in 2010, actually. But we were not dating then and all of that. And it was much, much later of recent that we said, we're in love, so let us take this right. to the next level. And here we are as husband and wife.
So I'm curious, where did the strategy come from? Because the buzz around it was incredible. Like I said, hundreds of people tagged me, screenshots, people reach out to me. Some even checked on me thinking that I was depressed because of the number of tags. I was like, no, I'm super happy for you.
It was fun.
It was fun. I was until now, I'm genuinely happy. Even when people tag me, I'm like, hey, no pressure on my side. I don't feel anything. But I was curious as to how you thought about the idea of introducing the wedding and the buzz around it. How did that come about?
It was because, you know, in our kind of work, in kind of the popularity and all of that, people start guessing, everybody's dating this, Ari's dating this person. There are guesswork and people start, I mean, there are many ladies that people have pinned my name into that I'm dating them, I was dating them, right? Many ladies and all of that. So that was where the whole idea came from. And okay, since the relationship was not public, very close friends who maybe kind of, but was not very public, it was unanticipated. And many people anticipated that it may likely be a lady in the industry, I mean, in business, personal development, or another coach, or another trainer. People already put me in a box, you understand?
Right.
And so we're like, you know what, since this has been happening, I'm going to capitalize on it. And I'm going to take a couple of pictures with her face not showing and just put it there and create, just take Facebook by storm. And the plan worked. I mean, it was basically everywhere. People spoke about it. People who were already pitting me with another girls or attacking them and mentioning them, is this you? Is this you? And we had a plan over rate, I think like a 1 month plan. Release the pictures one after another before the final day. And it was also good to learn some the power of curiosity in marketing and creating anticipation. Yeah, so it was so much fun to watch it unfold. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, we've been talking for a long time, but I don't think let me ask you something that's really important to me, and I think it's important to you as well. And it's one of the things that even if we close with, and if anyone leaves this, I think that this is going to be something that will change their life. When I started growing, one of the things that was, and a young man had told me, your mentor had told me this before, we had talked about this, that the fame is for a purpose. But most importantly, I realized that it was very important for me to set some precepts in my life and the values and the things that I would do. For example, in my business as a marketer, we work with basically several organizations to help them get clients on social media, Facebook ads, Instagram ads, sales funnels, email marketing. I made it a point of decision for myself that I will never work with a betting company. I will never work. I've had approaches from scammers. We know some of them have the dogs, well, the websites with dogs. Can you create content? Can you use your team to create blogging platforms? Can you do, what's it called, Google Ads and all of that? And I'm like, nope. That's the limit for what I would not do. And so I learned earlier on that you had to set precepts for what you do. And that even transcends to the Christian faith as well. And that's why I'm asking you this. I know very well that I do things that are wrong sometimes, quite honestly. I go overboard as a person. I have my flaws, but yeah, there is a limit for the things that I won't do. and there's limit for the things that you can take as a person. So I wanted you to talk, even if it is in close for someone who's watching this, talk about your relationship between your business, your purpose, and where that puts you with values and God. I think it's really important for people to find that spot and that balance. And again, even as we grow, we will make lots of money, I'm very sure. Very, very certain. 10 years from now, we'll be talking of really, really massive strides. But we need to set the presets for that. And it comes to values, God, and the things that we do. So how do you place that, and what's your perception as you are growing in that?
Let me answer from the angle of marriage, right? So that
right.
Come from there. One time I was talking with my wife, and I said, God helping me, but I have a personal decision. There's no day that there'll be anything like adultery or me cheating on you.
Mm.
And I gave her why. And the same why I want to give you is the same principle and concept that I use in my professional dealings, running the company and providing services to clients as a coach, as a consultant. So I have a checklist. If I want to do something, is it against the will of God? It's no. Is it against the laws of the land? It's no. Is it against my personal lifestyle principles? Is no. So I told my wife, you are number 4 in the process.
Ooh.
So then I will never do something because I'm afraid to hurt you. You are number 4 in the process. So before I go against the will of God, and I'm going against the laws of the land, and I'm going against my personal principles, we're going to reach you. Then the devil himself came and carried me and made me do that. And I travel a lot. I have seen tall, fat, short, beautiful girls throw themselves at me. Some will come and send you messages directly and tell you what they want. But as long as that action, that's one of the easiest way to streamline your actions. It's the same for business. I have missed out on training deals because they wanted me to pay bribes and do things that are against my will. And I'm a Christian, I'm a pastor. And there's a principle I believe in. There are things that if you do on your own and get there, you will keep doing on your own to stay there. But if God gets you there, he will keep you there, will take you, make you rise from there, right? That checklist that I have is always there. And of course, the first that comes on the table is, what is the will of God? And the will of God is not super complex. It's very clear in the scriptures. It's well documented. I always say something funny. If where I have gotten to, if I bribed you, if we did something funny for you to give an opportunity, honor. Let's see. I did not get to 20 countries and do all of these things because I bribed or I did things that were ungodly and all of that. I still prefer, among my core values, I have integrity, consistency, hard work, and innovation. These are very important personal core values to me, you see? And I live by them. For consistency, I always say that if I end up failing in this life, I will fail at my own terms. I will fail, right. I will fail working hard. I will fail showing up. I will fail studying. I will fail taking steps. But I will not fail and end up, so I just gave up unnecessarily. You see, so core values and those principles help us a lot. And again, as you said, they are more important for the future because more influence will come, more fame will come, more money will definitely come. I'm making more money now than I used to make 10 years ago. And if I didn't have the right core values, as I just made a post a few minutes ago, and I said, money unblocks your real character. You see a guy that is not having 3 girlfriends because he's broke to sponsor 3 girlfriends. Immediately money comes, he cannot finance his fornication life, right? So, but when you start having those values and that foundation, it prepares you for the future and what is coming. And in with when you study God and you read the Bible, one thing I've concluded with God is that there is a dimension of things that God will give you as an entrustment based on how you have grown, not based on how you pray. There's a level of maturity that qualifies you for you to experience the true meaning of the faithfulness of God. Because God's faithfulness, when he trusts you with something that is beyond your emotions. You see, I always say something funny. If Joseph slept with Potiphar's wife, he would have ended up with the head of a houseboy in Potiphar's house. But his core values and principles of how can I do this against the eyes of the Lord? He preferred to maintain his core values and principles of righteous living and go to prison than to do that. And God entrusted him with the palace instead of making him as the head boy of the family. Right? And we need to look at life from that dimension, from that long-term possibilities. We should not conclude, use our present situation and conclude on our future possibilities. You can lose an opportunity now because you preserved your dignity, you preserved your core values, you decided to honor God. It may feel as if you have lost, but the real thing that is for you is still coming.
All right. Man, I want to thank you for such an insightful conversation. I think this has been a long time coming.
If you just enjoyed this episode, the chances are that you're going to love other amazing episodes that we've recorded. So don't forget to check that out in the suggestion. And please hit the follow button so that you can keep in touch every time we publish an episode. Down in the description below, you'll find links to really helpful resources and also links to connect with the guest so that you can keep in touch with their amazing work. Like I always say, my friends, cheers to many more years of shamelessly living and crazily excelling passion and purpose. And I'll speak to you in the next episode.